Welcome to On the Brink Radio, broadcast number 251. This is Jeff Phillips Murferson coming at you from, I'm now down in the southern reaches of the land down under, a beautiful island the size of Ireland called Tasmania. It also sounds like a state of mind. We've got a bit of Tasmania happening, but it's my favorite part of Australia. I've been here about two or three days after a beautiful week and a half visit in the central coast of New South Wales. I'm staying with my really lovely friends, Walter and Elise, who have an organic farm here in a remote community in the Central Highlands near Cradle Mountain called Lorena. Very special alternative community here of probably a couple hundred people. I'm not sure of the exact population, but it's really cool to be here, and it's also cool to be here temperature-wise. It's quite chilly compared to where I just was in the Big Island of Hawaii. Even before the lava started erupting, it was probably getting up to about in the upper 70s or in the low to mid 80s at the highest in the day. And then in the central coast, it was probably about getting into the upper 60s, maybe hitting 70 in the daytime. But here, like now, it's about an hour before sunset, and it's sunny, but I'm guessing that it's probably about 12 degrees centigrade, which would be about 50-some degrees Fahrenheit. But anyway, it's really, really cool to be here. Tasmania is probably my very favorite part of Australia. I've spent a few months of just about every year here since 2001 when I first came. It's a land of extremes. Historically, you've got some of the of all the really, really horrible genocidal activities that happened here since the Europeans came, the worst of the worst happened here in Tasmania. Like, they had this thing called the Black Line, where they sort of had a dragnet to try to catch all the remaining indigenous people here, and then so they could round them up, and they collected the last lot of them who allowed themselves to be taken, and they were shipped over to Flinders Island to a community now called Umita, where they just basically were left to sit there and die. They weren't really locked up in a prison, but they weren't really free to go anywhere or do anything, and they could look out across the water and see their homeland, but they weren't free to come back here. But there's all kind of horror stories about things that have happened, about Black people being chased up, for example, Quambee Bluff near Deloraine, and they jumped off the cliff rather than allowing themselves to be taken prisoner by the white man. And I could devote a whole show to talking about the genocide that's happened here in Australia. And this is just the stuff we know about. I mean, a lot of it, or maybe not, maybe even the majority, would be untold stories, because if there was no one to witness what happened other than the people who did it, and there was no survivors to tell the story, then it's just either completely erased and vanished, or the story is told in a completely inaccurate and misrepresentational way by the survivors and or ancestor descendants of the people who did it. So we have no way of knowing, but it was my honor to communicate with Professor David Stannard when I was in Hawaii. I didn't get to meet him, but I did send him a painted rock. He's the historian at the University of Hawaii who wrote this amazing, horrifically comprehensive book called American Holocaust. About 25 years ago, he wrote the book. I read it cover to cover when Elizabeth and I were staying on Flinders Island, Tasmania, here back in 2011. It's a very, very challenging book to read because it's very heavily documented look at the massive amount of genocide perpetrated on the people of the Americas, both North and South, beginning with the Spanish conquistadors and the wave of all the European explorers and slave traders that came beginning in the 1400s. And just a lot of this was taken from eyewitness accounts of the Catholic priests who were the sort of cohorts of the conquistadors. They were all observing this from the vantage point of calling themselves Christian. That's another whole story too. But Tasmania has a lot of the nicest people I know anywhere, a very beautiful sense of community on the island. And some of the main thing that I love, as with everywhere, is the beauty and power of Mother Nature. So you've got a full fourth of the island that's like, it's called the Southwest Wilderness Area. It's very, almost totally unexplored because the terrain is just so rugged that makes it totally inaccessible by human beings. You might be able to crawl on your hands and knees through a lot of it if you didn't have very much gear, but you wouldn't get far. It is terrain that could be easily navigated by very agile marsupials like the quasi-mythical Thylacine or Tasmanian tiger, who by the mainstream mentality is believed to have been extinct since the 1930s, but according to a lot of people who I know here in Tasmania, they're certain that they've seen and heard them before, but they sort of keep their distance from people now. But I've come up with a new idea for a piece of art that I think I might paint for Wilder and Elise, because they have two beautiful little kids, Arendt and Geeta. Arendt's 4 and Geeta's 3. The subject of my painting will be a mythical being called the Tasyetocene. It's the Tasmanian Yeti crossed with the Thylacine. And it also sounds like it has yet to be seen. But the Tasyetocene, it'll of course have 2 heads, being from Tasmania, maybe 6 fingers on each hand, 6 claws. It'll have shiny fur and long, maybe walrus tusks instead of fangs, and a marsupial pouch facing backwards like the thylacine, and some thylacine stripes going across its back. So it'll be the Tasyetocene. And I won't be surprised if, like, a few years from now, somebody doesn't think they find the skeleton of one laying around down in the Southwest Wilderness area somewhere. Maybe Bob Brown will stumble onto it on one of his expeditions to protect the wilderness here. But yeah, Tasmania is sort of like an arc of nature. It's got the largest and tallest hardwood trees in the world, the Eucalyptus regnans, or mountain ash, for example, in the Styx forest near Medina. It's got pandanus trees that are very different from the pandanus of Queensland or Hawaii. It's got a massive amount of she oaks, or Casuarina equisetifolia, the beautiful sort of little conifer tree with little cones and needles that I so lovingly spent a lot of time with there on the Big Island of Hawaii. It's the exact same tree. I just painted a rock for another Cassie friend that near the golf course there in Wamboro, where I was just staying for the past couple of weeks. But it's so lovely to be back here. Tasmania has always treated me really well. I've met a lot of really nice people and had a lot of support for my art, had a lot of adventures, and I would say probably my very, very best times were here, were on Flinders Island, when I visited Arnie Balarney there in 2006, and then in 2007, after I'd met Lisbeth, in 2008, we went down there in December and stayed until March of 2009. And then we went back in 2011 and stayed for 4.5 months, where we built our Mother Earth Temple, one of the most productive, creative times that I've ever had. And we were living totally off the grid, and we did not even have electricity of any kind except for the batteries in our cameras. We didn't really use our computers except for when we went into town once every week or two. to go online and get some groceries and stuff. So that's when I first became fully acquainted with living totally away from electricity, and your whole system seems to recalibrate. Here at Lorena, it's very interesting because Wouter, he's originally from Belgium, and he's a very avid and professional organic farmer. His farm is called Seven Springs Farm, and he harvests a massive amount of organic produce. Like last night, I made a batch of Ultra Doll, but I had freshly grown organic kale, two different kinds of kale, celery, silver beet, beetroot, garlic, onions that he grew. And then I also had turmeric that was from the shop. But they also have apples and in season. They also have some citrus, but he also has a massive amount of tomatoes and broccoli. And I'm helping him to get a little crop of go-to cola started. And Ronald at Marlene Herbs has an organic plant enterprise where he grows four kinds of lavender and about 100 other different medicinal herbs and plants that he extracts the substances from, the phytochemicals, and makes them into either essential oils and or tinctures. But he's got the most beautiful lavender oil that I've ever encountered anywhere. And I'm also talking with Wouter about the possibility of growing some white sage. My friend Michael at Sage Dreaming up in the mountains, Victoria, has been growing the Salvia apiana for over 16 years there. It's actually a plant. It's not indigenous to Australia. It's indigenous to the southwest high desert area of Arizona, New Mexico, and the USA. But he's adapted this plant to grow at high elevation down here. And I think it would do well here in Victoria. I mean, here in Tasmania. Because it does really well in Victoria there, especially with, Michael said that the hotter it gets in the summer, the more it makes the oils or the camphors really concentrated, which is what gives it its beautiful smell. I've just been around a couple of flocks of some of my favorite Australian parrots called Rosellas. You might hear some of their little sounds as they fly over there. And there's actually two different kinds that I've seen today, the green Rosellas and the eastern Rosellas, which are more multicolored. And there's a third kind that is the original kind that I saw when I was living in Halls Gap, Victoria, called the crimson Rosellas. They're red and blue. And there's a fourth kind called a pale-headed Rosella with kind of a yellow head that I've only seen once. I saw them up at Bargara off of the coast of Bundaberg near the Mon Repos Sea Turtle Sanctuary. Tasmania has got some amazing landscapes, some really wonderful people. It's got Trace Mae National Park with Wineglass Bay and Mount Amos, the giant granite domes, the hazards that look kind of like these mountains in Scotland. You've got King Island and Flinders Island. Flinders Island's a member of the Furneaux group, which has about 30 different islands, including Clark Island and Chapel Island with the tiger snakes, whose venom is two or three times more powerful than that of the mainland Tasmania. You've got Cradle Mountain and Dove Lake, which is actually only about 20 or 30 kilometers from here, line of sight. We're sort of almost on the slopes of Cradle. It's one of the most popular tourist destinations, not only in Tasmania, but in all of Australia. And you've got Kainanyi, or what used to be called Mount Wellington, a giant mountain about 1,500 feet high, that there's now a big controversy because they want to install a cable car going up there. I think Cascade Brewery is one of its sponsors because I think they want to have a brewery or a pub up there at the top. I can sort of see it from both ways. It would probably, you know, it might boost tourism. And it would certainly be nice to sit up there and have a beer looking out from the top of that mountain. But at the same time, there's already a giant microwave tower up there. And so I'm not really in favor of putting man-made stuff on right in the middle of beautiful nature areas, but this place has already kind of been despoiled by the parking lot and the microwave tower, so you could reason, well, what's another couple of buildings going to be, and a giant cable car going up here. I mean, it'll be sort of a visual blight, but this is the modern world, and by no means am I justifying all this, but it's never far from my mind, everything that's happening in Hawaii with the volcanoes. I monitor that several times a day. Just yesterday, there was 3 updates from the Hawaiian Volcanoes Observatory. Normally, there's only about 2 every 24 hours, but there was 3. I think because conditions are changing so rapidly and so much lava is coming out, it's actually inundating houses and communities a lot faster than they thought. And people are really in danger of getting cut off, having their route of escape cut off by flowing lava. And there's no end in sight. It doesn't seem to be letting up. But in Hawaii, I was warm almost all the time. I had to put on jackets a couple of times. But basically, even at nighttime, I could walk around with no shirt on and shorts and be comfortable. But here, I'm getting quite cold. Like, now the sun has just gone down behind a tree, and I'm sort of sitting in only partial sun, so it's just dropped a few degrees, and my hands are getting quite cold. I've got on my shorts and my open-toed shoes, but just like at the Bennett Meditation Center in Wamberal, we've got not one but 2 wood fires going in the house here. One's in the wood stove in the kitchen, the other one's in the heater is sort of over in the living room area, but so it's nice and warm inside. But I wanted to come and sit outside to record this show. But it's so beautiful to be here. I love Tasmania. It's the home of many unique marsupials. In addition to the Thylacine or Tasmanian tiger, you've got the Tasmanian devil, which is a cute little, kind of like a small little bear. You've got echidnas, which is kind of like the marsupial version of a porcupine. You've got wombats, which are kind of like little bear, groundhog kind of things. They're sort of like a horizontally walking groundhog panda bear kind of thing, whereas the Tasmanian devils are more kind of like dog-like bears. They have a sort of a canine element to them. And you've also got quolls, which is a marsupial, but they're more cat-like. And then, you know, the thylacine, or the Tasmanian tiger, it's not a cat, but it's got some cat-like qualities, like its ability to leap and its big teeth and claws. But they're neither dog nor cat. The amazing landscapes here. The mountainous landscapes of Flinders Island, Mount Killiecrankie and Old Man's Head, where I've camped out numerous times, done a massive amount of photography. Mount Strzelecki, the giant granite domes, over 900 meters high. And most of the really cool stuff in Tasmania I've never been to, just because you're talking about several day trips of hiking across really rugged terrain. And I'm gradually building back up to being able to carry my heavy amount of gear again after my bicycle accident a couple of years ago. I'm able to do it. I'm able to carry all my backpacks and big bulky bags and stuff that most people wouldn't even be able to pick up. And I can do all that. But my legs aren't quite as totally as stable and strong as they should be, even though I've been bicycling a lot. I met a really interesting bloke at the Spirit of Tasmania Lounge in Devonport. I had to spend a few hours there on Tuesday until Wilder could come and pick me up, and his name is Peter. He's part Tasmanian Aborigine, which was really, really special to meet him. I'm going to make a painted rock for him. But the blog posting accompanying this will share a lot of my experience of Tasmania with a lot of photos, like from Lake Dobson, Russell Falls, and the Tarn Shelf, an area up in the center of the island where I was artist in residence there, I guess, about 3 or 4 years ago. And a lot of the time I spent in Hobart, the large mural that I did for my friend Bruce Roberts there, and that was then bought from me by my friend that owns a medical clinic there a couple of years ago. And the Hobart Botanical Garden, which is very beautiful, and some of my tree friends there, Sequoia dendron giganteum, the redwood tree, and Sequoia sempervirens, another type of redwood tree that's the same age as me, some ginkgo biloba trees, larch, the only deciduous conifer, araucaria trees from South America, and the Wallamai pines, which is this ancient Gondwanaland pine tree that they found growing down in the valley below the Blue Mountains in New South Wales. And all the beautiful marsupials and the white and black cockatoos and the king parrots and the kookaburras, and everybody's here. The battles that people fight to protect the forest. And there's a lot of ocean life here. And also Hobart is one of the two ports for Antarctica. A lot of research boats come and go out of here. But I think I'm going to head back inside now and get warm. My hands are getting a bit numb here. And Tasmania is not as cold as people in Queensland might think. Because you can be up in Queensland and just mention the name Tasmania and people will go and grab their coat and start shivering. But right now, it is, even with the sun shining, it's going down. And it's making my hands get a little numb, so I'm going to go inside and possibly record more of this show. But come and visit Tasmania. It's a very beautiful place, a very beautiful state of mind, a remote island off of a remote island continent. There's no place like it in the world. And there's no volcanic activity here. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.